Good morning. My name is Grace, and this morning we'll be reading from the book of 1 Kings together. There are two separate readings, the first one coming from chapter 3, and then we'll flip over a few chapters to chapter 11. So let's start in 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 5 to 13. We'll be listening into a conversation between King Solomon and God. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream. And God said, "Ask for whatever you want me to give you." Solomon answered, "You have shown great kindness to your servant, my father David, because he was faithful to you and righteous and upright in heart. You have continued this great kindness to him and have given him a son to sit on his throne this very day. Now, Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David. But I'm only a little child and do not know how to carry out my duties. Your servant is here among the people you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to count or number. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours?" The Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, "Since you have asked for this, and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart, so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both wealth and honor, so that in your lifetime, you will have no equal among kings." Now our second reading comes from 1 Kings, chapter 11, verse 1 to 4. King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter, Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites. They were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, "You must not intermarry with them, because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods." Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. He had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been.
Well, hey, my name's Tom. If I haven't met you before, I'd love to do that after the service. If you missed last week, you definitely did miss out, but let me catch you up. We're starting our series in the Song of Songs. And one of the things I find particularly helpful about this book is its overlap with some of the thoughts that we often have about sexuality, intimacy, relationships in the Christian faith. For example, have you ever thought or been asked this question: is the Bible anti-sex? And you can absolutely see how people come to that conclusion, because you read the New Testament especially, there are a bunch of commands made to Christian people about how sexuality is best lived out. And you could come to the conclusion that the Bible is against sexuality. And then you turn to the book of Song of Songs and you say, "Ah, there must be something else going on here." Another example, if you walk down to one of the standard bookshops around here, or you jump online and you look at the bestseller list, especially within the self-help kind of genre, they will often refer to the value of Greek Stoicism. And I think there's something really great to be learned there about getting control of yourself and being able to respond in a calm and collected way. And yet, if your entire philosophy of life is built around Greek Stoicism, and then you pick up the book of Song of Songs, which is this lavish, passion-filled, excitable book, you go, wait, there must be more to life than just Greek Stoicism. I've found this book especially particularly helpful when we think about its celebration of sexuality and relationships. I've been particularly appreciative of how sensitive it is. I'm aware that as we read a book about a man and a woman who just really, really like each other, that can hurt to read. It can really hurt to read the Song of Songs because you sit there thinking, that was me, it's not me right now, I would like that to be me. And it clashes with our current experience of relationships, intimacy. But as you read through the book of Song of Songs, there's a couple of awkward moments that happen, but what they point to is the idea that sexuality in society right now and in the world that we live in that's fallen, it's not all smooth sailing. And actually the book itself doesn't hold up just this 100% perfect celebration, but it's actually marred the whole way through, which I think mirrors the human experience, at least mine, if it doesn't mirror yours. So I hope that today, as a church, and for the next couple of weeks, as we read this book, we can tune into the sensitivity and at the same time tune into the celebration of sexuality, intimacy, and love that Song of Songs is holding out for us. So in Song of Songs, there's a couple of key characters. It's really all about one man and one woman. In fact, the woman seems to be the primary center of everything that's happening here. There's a couple of side characters as well. So there's the woman's friends. They're called the Daughters of Jerusalem. And one of the most repeated lines in the book of Song of Songs is when she turns to her friends and says, hey, don't stir up love before it's ready. But today, I've been given a slightly unusual task for this sermon, which is to focus on the other minor character in the book of Song of Songs. We're going to focus today on King Solomon. So if you're reading 1 Kings 3 and 1 Kings 11 just before, you're thinking this has nothing to do with the Song of Songs, that's what we're going to be talking about today, is this question: how does Solomon fit together with the book of Song of Songs? And I want to start by noticing something very simple, which is this. It's weird that Solomon has his name attached to a book that's all about love, intimacy, relationships. It's just really weird. If you're unfamiliar with Solomon himself, let me give you a picture that might help. If you walk into the New South Wales Art Gallery, big doors there, a couple of little steps, you take the first available right-hand turn into that series of rooms, you'll see a very large picture, bigger than the screen, that is exactly this. Now, the guy on the stairs is Solomon. The person walking up the stairs is the Queen of Sheba. She's a queen in and of her own right. She's come to visit Solomon, to see his wisdom, to see his wealth. And what's really awkward about attaching Solomon to the book of Song of Songs is all of those women who are sitting behind Solomon in this picture, probably representing the fact that he had many, many, many wives and concubines. Yes, that happened. No, we would not recommend. And it's weird to think that Solomon gets his name attached to the book of Song of Songs. In some Bibles even, you'll see this printed as Song of Solomon, right? I'll read something from the leader's notes. So if you're a growth group member, this is what your growth group leader was given to read about this book. It says, the Song of Songs is beautiful poetry that delicately depicts the love, praise, mutual enjoyment, especially sexual enjoyment of a young married couple. It's set in contrast to the depersonalized and dehumanizing polygamy of Solomon. So all of this as run-up to the very first verse in the book of Song of Songs. If you've got your Bible in front of you, Song of Songs, the very first verse, it says, Solomon's Song of Songs. How did Solomon get his name at the front of this book? That's weird. If you do the literal back translation of this, it says something like, it's really clunky, but it says the Song of Songs, which is of Solomon. And we're asking ourselves, in what relation is Solomon to this book? What does it mean when it is of Solomon? There's been at least four major recommendations. And the most standard one that lots of people have run with for a long time is that Solomon wrote it. So he's the author of the book of Song of Songs. But as we go through today, I hope that you'll come with me in recognizing that that's an unusual idea to attribute authorship of this book to the guy who had 700 wives and 300 concubines, and yet it's a book about one man, one woman who just really love each other. A second possibility is that somebody dedicated this book to Solomon. So like maybe the Queen of Sheba or someone similar bringing a gift to him, and they're dedicating this book to Solomon. A third option is that it has affinity with Solomon. So we today might say this is wisdom literature, as opposed to other parts of the Old Testament that's like law, or other parts like 1 Kings, which is history. We say, oh, this is wisdom literature. It's got lots of images and poetry. But back then they didn't talk in those terms. They might have just said, oh, it's of Solomon. You know, it's like the other wisdom literature that has its name attached to Solomon. That's a pretty reasonable option. And a fourth option there is that maybe this book is of Solomon because Solomon's in it. He's part of the subject matter of the book. But the flavor of the whole thing seems to be against Solomon in lots of ways. Can I show that to you in chapter 8? Come to chapter 8 with me. It'll come up on the screen as well. So Solomon gets his name attached to the first chapter, also gets his name in the 8th chapter, but he doesn't come off very well. These are difficult verses to interpret, but tune in. Solomon, verse 11, had a vineyard in Baal Hamon. He let out his vineyard to tenants. Each was to bring for its fruit 1,000 shekels of silver. Verse 12, but my own vineyard is mine to give. The 1,000 shekels are for you, Solomon, and 200 are for those who tend its fruit. What's happening there is probably that the lady who's the center of the book is speaking, and she's recounting a moment when she said no to the offer of joining Solomon's harem. The idea there is that Solomon would send out people to kind of find the beautiful ladies. He'd send them out with a bit of money in their pocket to try and make it happen. And the language there of vineyard throughout the book of Song of Songs is often about your sexuality or your body. And what this woman says is, my own vineyard, it's mine to give. And so you can keep your money, mate, keep the 1,000 shekels, give a couple to the people you've sent out to come and get me, but I am not joining your harem because my heart is given to the other man in this book. See, Solomon, does he come off well or badly in this moment in the scriptures? He comes off as a bit of a jerk. He comes off as the bad guy in the story. And in fact, that little intro video that we had showed for us before was drawing from Solomon, Song of Songs, chapter 8, verse 7, probably the high point of the whole book, and it says this, if one were to give all the wealth of one's house for love, it would be utterly scorned. Solomon is portrayed in chapter 8 as trying to do exactly that. And he doesn't come off very well in this book at all. So all I'm trying to do so far today is just explain a little bit of how this book fits in with Solomon. In what sense is he connected to this book? And if you're happy to take that as kind of level one of the deep dive, let's go to level two. Let's go a level deeper and let's go through those readings we had for us before to get a bit of background on this Solomon guy. How does he fit in? Because this is going to help us understand the whole book of the Song of Songs as being written against Solomon's version of intimacy and relationship and holding up a much better version. If you come back to 1 Kings chapter 3, which is the first reading we had for us, 1 Kings chapter 3, he actually starts off really well. He starts off, you could say, as Mr. Wisdom. This is partially why it makes sense that so much of the Old Testament wisdom literature is attached to Solomon, because he did have, you could say, a wise era. He had a moment when he was really on it. And we get that pictured for us starting in 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 5. It says, at Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, ask for whatever you want me to give you. If we pull forward to verse 9, Solomon's response is, give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people, distinguish between right and wrong, for who is able to govern this great people of yours? Verse 10, the Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, since you've asked for this, and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice. Verse 12, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart, so that there will never be anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Verse 13, moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both wealth and honor. so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. So Solomon starts off really well. God says, hey, what do you want? He says, I would like wisdom, please. And God says, incredible answer. Let me give that to you. I'll give you a couple of bonuses as well. He becomes known for his wisdom, so much so that people like the Queen of Sheba will come to visit and experience the wealth that God's given him, as well as the wisdom that he's been given. And so a lot of the Old Testament wisdom literature has Solomon's name attached to it, because he definitely did start off very wise. But you come to 1 Kings 11. And if he started life as Mr. Wisdom, he turns a little bit into Mr. Wives Dumb. That's his kind of story. Chapter 11, verse 1, this is Solomon's downfall. He says, King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women beside Pharaoh's daughter. Just a pause there, by the way. This is not saying that people of different nationalities cannot get married. It's saying something totally different. Look at this. He says, Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, Hittites. Verse 2, they were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, you must not intermarry with them, because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods. This is what Pete was talking about. Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. He had 700 wives of royal birth, 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord, his God. So he starts off life as Mr. Wisdom. Unfortunately, he kind of degenerates, and his faith trajectory, you could say, is one of downfall. So if we can come back to this idea, which guides the whole sermon, chapter 1, verse 1, in what sense is Solomon related to this book? You could say he wrote it, but there's definitely some problems with that, aren't there? There is, though, one really lovely idea that some people have come up with, which is that maybe, and it's in the land of guesswork, maybe Solomon wrote this at the very end of his life. Maybe as he looks back on his life, he realizes he's been a total fool, and he's writing this maybe even to his daughters, and they might be the daughters of Jerusalem, and he's saying, don't do what I did. And this is a celebration of what sexuality and intimacy and love is meant to be, in contrast to the way that he lived his life. If that was so, that would be wonderful. But I think it's hard to say that Solomon wrote this in the middle of his life. It might have been dedicated to him. It might be something that's in his style of writing from his wise era, kind of like Proverbs or maybe some of the Psalms. And it definitely has something to do with him in terms of subject matter. So there you go. We've done a sermon so far on what the relationship between Solomon and Song of Songs is. But I am relatively confident that none of you were up until 2 a.m. in the morning really fretting, really worrying, you know, oh, did Solomon write this? Like, what's the relationship? That is not the thing that came, that you came to church with as your burning issue on your heart. Because you've got relationships you're in. You've got things in your life that are going sour. You've got things that you're hoping for, dreading. And I'd love to touch on those things for a little minute in relationship to Solomon's story that we've just rehearsed. I'd love to propose three different overlaps between your experience and what we notice in Solomon's life. Does that sound okay for the last 5 minutes? Here we go. Number one, who you love can draw you towards God, and it can also draw you away. Who you love can have a significant impact upon your faith. This is why if you have kids and you think about your kids, you hope that one day they will bring home someone who really loves the Lord and is going to be great for their own development. You know, and one of the things you dread is that your kid will bring home somebody who you think, oh, this person is absolutely going to lead you away from the Lord, because you recognize inherently that who you love has a dramatic impact upon your faith. I just want to put this in the positive for a second today. I'm going to speak to you. Many of us here in the room are in long-term relationships. Many of those relationships are marriages. I just want to speak to you as if you are married, recognizing that not all of us are. You have, as a spouse, incredible positive potential influence over your spouse and their faith. Think about this, for example. Maybe you've been married for a bunch of years and your spouse knows that, you know, you kind of show up to church, but it's not a huge part of your life during the week. And then 2025 comes and you're like, hey, new year, new me, I'm going to start reading the Bible. And you start doing that like every day. And they really notice that. Think about the spiritual climate in your house and what you've done to it, not just for your own soul, but for the people around you. You have, if you live with somebody, incredible potential to positively impact their faith. This is the opposite of what Solomon allowed his wives to do to him. They led him astray, but you actually could do exactly the opposite. I just want to paint that as a positive potential outcome for you today, recognizing the impact you have on the people in your house. That's number one overlap with our lives and Solomon's life today. Can I take you to number two? I want to talk about the difference between following God in the past and following God in the present, right? Solomon starts off really well. He says, I want wisdom. God gives it to him. His problem is that as his life goes on, his faith trajectory, maybe it starts high and ends low. So if we could just talk personally for a second, what's your faith trajectory? You know, if you could map out your entire life with a very simple kind of line chart, would that line chart go up? Would it have a big dip somewhere, a big camel hump somewhere? What would the faith trajectory of your life look like? For some of us, you might say, my faith trajectory is up. You know, I was born in a house where we didn't really engage with God at all, or if we did, it was a very nominal kind of way. But actually, you yourself, and this is amazing, have been stepping forward in faith. You've been picking up the things of God in a way that no one in your recent family history has done. And we're so excited for that. And actually, in a couple of weeks' time, we're going to pause this series. We're going to have celebration Sunday, a bunch of people are going to jump in baptism tubs. We're going to celebrate people whose faith trajectory is on the way up because there are so many of us here at this church. But I'd love to talk to you just for a second if you would say, oh, I reckon my faith trajectory is probably pretty similar to Solomon. And you say, if I had to chart the high point of my spiritual life, my connection to God, my high point was absolutely in the past. Maybe for you, you were connected to like a youth group or a really great university ministry or something, and that was the moment that you were really raging for God, and then you got married, you got a mortgage, you got some mini people running around your house, and you think, I was really faithful back then, and now I'm just kind of holding on to my faith. The only thing I need you to remember from the whole sermon today is this. Don't be like Solomon, be like Leo, right? Now, Leo is in charge of our Mandarin ministry. He's hiding up the back there. And I was talking to Leo in the office on Friday, and I said, Leo, what was the best year of your spiritual life? When was your spiritual high? And Leo, if I've recalled this correctly, you said something like, I actually feel like I'm getting closer and closer to God every year. And I think that's amazing. That's the opposite of Solomon's life trajectory. Leo is feeling like he's growing in faith, maybe taking new risks for God, seeing God come through in whole new ways. And I just want to propose that this could be you as well. To put it really simply, what if the second half of your life outstripped the first half of your life in your connection to God, in the ways that you stepped out in faith for him? It doesn't have to be true that the best days of your faith are in the past. There is really very little stopping you from pushing forward and making the second half of your life the high point of your spiritual existence. That makes sense to do, right? Because we're on our way to the new heavens and the new earth. Our end trajectory, where we're heading long term, is intimate, close relationship with the Father. And it makes sense if our life aligns with that now, because that is where we're going. All I'm trying to say is be like Leo, don't be like Solomon. Number three, final thing I'd love to propose to you, and this is a hard question to answer, but you could answer it personally in your heart. Solomon was led away by his relationship with the 1,000 wives and concubines. But what is it for you? Are you able to name it? Say, you know what's really leading me away from my relationship with God is? I've heard that Alcoholics Anonymous, for example, so much of the battle is admitting that you have a problem. And we could say that specifically today, that so much progress is made when you accurately identify the thing that's holding you back. And it's going to be different for every single one of us. This is a personal question for you. Are you able to just name it clearly and say, I am being led away from faith by... Because once you can point at it, you're way more likely to be able to do something about it. And so as we move towards a close, those were kind of three overlaps between our existence and Solomon's life chart. I'd love to close actually by pointing us not just to ourselves, but pointing us and putting our attention on Jesus. Jesus, at the end of his life, he was talking to some people, and he explained how the whole Old Testament scriptures point to him. And you come to Song of Songs, and you say, well, how does Song of Songs point to Jesus? And at least today, as we've investigated Solomon, you could say that Jesus is the true and better Solomon. You think about Solomon, he's a king, but ultimately he used his power and his wealth to buy people for himself. He used his power to exert power over other people, get what he wanted from them. You contrast that with Jesus, and you go, Jesus, ultimate power. But what was he always doing? He was always wiping people's feet. He was always speaking kindness into a world that was full of judgmentalism. And ultimately, if we can pull up the high point verse of this whole book, we say, hey, if you were going to try and buy love, we would scorn you. But let me tell you about what God has done for you. That because he loves you, he has given something that is not monetary in order to win you to himself. What he gave, which we do not scorn but put our faith in, is he gave the life of his only begotten son. And what I am so excited about at church at the moment is seeing so many people making big steps forward in your faith trajectory towards that God. It's making me so excited to be a part of what God is doing here at the moment.